Hammurabi then is concerned with matters of loans. There is a large section devoted to marriage and inheritance, and this section makes up the majority of the laws. What follows provides very specific information about the fees for various professions and the rates that could be set to hire animals or workers or even boats or other sorts of equipment that one would need to conduct one's business. As we look more closely at Hammurabi's laws, we'll focus on a few themes. One of the most informative aspects of Hammurabi's law code relates to social status, since the punishment for a crime usually varied according to one's status. Certain social classes were defined in these laws. Hammurabi's laws set out three groups of people: the free person, who is called an awilam, a slave, who is called a wardam, and commoners, who are called mushkanum. This leaves a lot of room for people in between. What is, if someone is not a free person or a slave, what does this status of commoner mean? And we're very uncertain about who these people were. Even though we see what seems to be a very strict framework with punishments connected to what your status in society is, in reality, these social classes raise more questions. And this is indicative of the laws as a whole, as we'll see. From what we can tell, the last group of commoners did not merit all of the rights of free men and women, but they were not owned as slaves were. They were somewhere in between. And we'd like to know exactly what their connection was that meant that they owed something to some individual that made them of a lesser status than a freed person. If a free person blinded another free person, or an awilam, then the offender would be blinded. But if a free person blinded a slave or a commoner, he then had to pay a fine for this crime. Although these distinctions in punishment may seem unjust, the fact that laws existed for each class ensured some level of protection, even for the slave. Most surviving laws provide for the poorest members of society, and this illustrates a desire to provide justice for all. So just as a king provides work for widows and orphans, and he gives them food in compensation for this work, the laws, too, are focused on the poorest members of society and give them some protection. In addition to social status, several laws refer to family connections and relationships, and these are the marriage laws that I referred to earlier. In general, the laws reinforce the authority of the father or the husband. The father both protected and controlled his family. The laws of Hammurabi go so far as to give fathers permission to cut off the hand of a son who struck him. Now, this seems very extreme, and it's also unlikely that this type of penalty would be carried out very often. But they do demonstrate the level of legal control that the fathers had over their families. And this control would be guaranteed by the king. So it does show that this is a very paternalistic society. Several legal issues revolved around women and concerns specific to marriage and divorce. The divorce laws vary depending on whether the husband or the wife initiates the process. Hammurabi writes, "If a man intends to divorce his first-ranking wife who did not bear him children, he shall give her one mina of silver and restore to her the dowry that she brought from her father's house, and he shall divorce her." Again, the price that a husband would pay depended on his status. So a commoner or mushkanum would pay 20 shekels of silver instead of one mina of silver. Some reasons are also provided in these laws for women to divorce.